What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast. How about them Cowboys? That was ugly. That was ugly. My guy Matt Nagy, as of recording this, it's nothing's official, but did that end Jason Garrett's career? But like Troy Aikman said, who are they going to replace him with? What an ugly game by the Cowboys. Might have been the best game of Mitch Trubisky's career. We'll dive into that off the top, of course. I like how the NFL, the week after Thanksgiving, they take a couple Thanksgiving teams, and then they just play them on the Thursday so they get a full week's rest, and we get a normal-looking Thursday night game. Some thoughts on David Tepper. Some things I noticed just over the last couple days after Ron Rivera was fired. And then just Ron Rivera, you know, I've been thinking a lot about him and just the quote unquote CEO types and wondering if they're a little bit of a dying breed in this modern day NFL. Urban Meyer, you know, and the botched, I guess the USC went after Bob Stoops and Urban Meyer wasn't even interested and they kept Clay Helton. Just a disaster at USC, you know, really one of the blue bloods in college football. The most important program for the Pac-12. I mean, obviously Oregon is important and it has really elevated these last, you know, probably 15, 20 years. But they need a little help and they need USC to be good. The conference needs USC to be good. Right now all the good teams are in the North. Oregon, Washington, Stanford has been good. They're down, but Cal's good. And USC is just a shit show. So we'll dive into that, and then I'll go through every game Sunday. We got a lot of games. And Middlecoff Mailbag, as always, at John Middlecoff. At John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. You slide up in those DMs, and then I answer your questions on the podcast. Same as my Twitter handle. Just holler at me. Okay, let's start with the game. And let me start with a big picture thought. I would imagine many of you agree. I think Florio wrote something about this. To me, it's pretty black and white. Listen, winning your division in the NFL matters because 99% of the time to win your division, you got to win like 12 games. Just look around the NFL. I mean, every division is probably going to average 12 to 13 games like in terms of their winners. If you win your division, here's a rule that I propose after watching the Cowboys, who are probably going to win their division, and if they don't, the Eagles are going to win the division. And both teams, more than likely, are going to be under 500. They're going to have a 7-9 team win the division. In a conference that has Seattle, San Francisco, both going to the playoffs, both 10-2, you have Minnesota and Green Bay, you know, let's say Minnesota's probably still going to go 11-5, maybe Green Bay goes 12-4, and then the Saints are going to win 13 or 14 games. But the Rams and even the Bears might get to 9-7 or even 10-6. So I propose this. If you don't go 500 and you are a division champ, you don't get to make the playoffs. Because right now, it's so screwed up. You win your division, you're guaranteed a home game. Imagine going 7-9 and hosting a home game. And I get that's happened before, but we got to put an end to this. And after watching the Cowboys tonight, who absolutely stink, Jason Garrett, the team is officially just done. I'm tired of even talking about them. Now, I get they're the biggest brand in the NFL. I actually picked them to win the NFC. Their roster just gets worse and worse by the week in terms of not their talent, but their players just look awful. Amari's limping around out there. Dak Prescott, I get quarterbacks make a lot of money. But under no circumstances, let me repeat, no circumstances. I don't care if the cap goes to $300 million, would I feel comfortable giving Dak Prescott $35 million a year? And I like Dak Prescott. Just like I said, under no circumstances could I give Jared Goff $110 million. I wouldn't have wanted to give Carson Wentz $105 million, but at least he's an elite talent. So if I am going to miss, I'm going to miss with elite talent. I'm not missing with average talents. And, you know, Dak's above average, and I like Dak. I'm a fan of Dak. To me, he's like a $22, $25 million quarterback. He's like Jimmy Garoppolo. Pay him like Jimmy Garoppolo. I get the market and all that BS. I couldn't even fathom giving him that much money. Clearly, Jason Garrett's a dead man walking. But I think that the NFL needs to do some soul searching because the Cowboys or the Eagles are going to win this division, with teams like the Bears, who have beat them, the Rams. Rams play them this year? They probably beat them too. And, you know, are going to be well over 500 and are going to miss the playoffs. And you're going to have the Cowboys or the Eagles hosting a playoff game. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. And for competitive balance purposes, and I get it's an outlier situation. It only happens every 4 or 5 years. But it shouldn't even be an option. To win your, to make the playoffs, I you could argue you should have to be above 500. At minimum, you should have to be 9-7. Maybe if you're 8-8, you get to be the sixth seed, but you don't get to host the playoff game. I'd have to think about that. I'd be good with 8-8 not making the playoffs either. So maybe you have to be above 500, and then we could even do some negotiating whether they should host a playoff game. You should have to have a better record to host a playoff game. Like, this is pretty basic, like Little League level stuff. But the Cowboys, just no moss. I can't talk about him anymore. Jerry Jones will do enough talking for us all. He'll surely make excuses. And like Troy Aikman said on the broadcast tonight, if you fire Jason Garrett, who the hell are you going to make the interim coach? I mean, Kellen Moore, do they have one person that would deserve to be an interim coach? Of course not. You just keep Jason Garrett. You let the Titanic sink, and you reconvene at the end of the season. Urban Meyer, Matt Rhule, make a run at Lincoln Riley. I mean, we all know the names. And who knows? Like, the Cowboys are in shambles now. I feel for Jerry, who's, you know, coming down the home stretch of life. You know, he's probably on hole about 17. And, you know, he may never get to see the Cowboys win many more playoff games, let alone win the Super Bowl. Because tonight was, they got their ass kicked. And on the flip side, listen, he's my guy. He's proven this year could not have gone much shittier for the Bears. They showed that clip of how many guys they have injured. They're in a big boy market. They are the most important team in the market, and they are in a market with the Chicago Cubs. And the Chicago Bulls stink, but they I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy named Michael Jordan. They happen to be a big deal, too. And Notre Dame football is also in that area, though. They're down. But the Bears matter the most. Like, it's the NFL. Beside the city of L.A., football's king in every major city. That's just the way it works. And maybe New York with the Yankees, but I'd argue when the Giants are good, they trump all. At least it's a push. Football's king in this country. And you can say, well, this is a football podcast. Listen, I'm one of the rare millennials that watches a lot of basketball and baseball. I don't know if you've seen the ratings, but they're all in the tank. I consume it. And the Bears are a really big deal. And everyone, Nagy sucks, and you know, the Raiders won the... My mentions have been telling me the Raiders have won the Khalil Mack trade for about 3 weeks. It's got awfully quiet this about last 10 days. A lot of quiet in my mentions. Not a lot of noise there. Because as the Bears, who are 6-6 team with a positive point differential, are now 7-6, I'd imagine with their schedule probably end up at like 8-8. The Khalil Mack had a big sack tonight. And listen, Khalil Mack hasn't even been that good this year. But it's clear, like, they have a lot of talent on their roster. If their quarterback, he doesn't even need to play like that. I mean, that might be the best game of his career. But if he just plays well, they have a chance to win every week. If they just got above average quarterback play right now, they'd probably be like 9-4, right? He was so horrendous in so many games. And one thing I think you saw Matt Nagy unleash tonight, and he's got to be kicking himself because he hasn't done it really all season, is let Mitch run. He doesn't need to be Lamar Trubisky, but he should be a mobile guy. He can run. One of his best assets is his legs, because one of his best assets so far in his career has not been his accuracy. So when you force him to throw 35, 40 times a game, it's usually not going to go well. When you let him run, when you let him run the zone read, and when you let him just kind of freelance and make some plays, you have a chance, because their personnel just top to bottom on both sides of the ball is pretty damn good. And when your worst moments as a coach, like your worst moments as a coach, like Pete Carroll over the last 10 years, their lowest moment was 9-7 2 years ago. Nagy's an idiot. The Bears are screwed. And they're going to what? Go 8-8? 9-7 maybe? Like, come on. Like, that shows this guy knows what he's doing. The Bears, they got a lot going for them. Now, they still got a big question mark in the quarterback. I'm not going to overreact to one game against a team that looked like they were quitting. You know, they're going to have to figure out this offseason if they're going to pick up the fifth-year option. The only way I would entertain picking up the fifth-year option is for him just to ball out and they basically win out. Like, if he has a couple more bad games, I'm still not doing it. I'm not overreacting to a small sample size. He has a big sample size, and we've seen him struggle. Now, if he keeps playing like this down the stretch, maybe I'll be open-minded to it. I think sometimes you have to not, just in like anything in life, not overreact to short-term things when you have a long body of evidence. And that's tough. You know, talking to just buddies with the Bears. He's a high-character guy. They really like him. But the game tape is the game tape. He hasn't been very good. He hasn't played many games like that. But you do see his talent. Like Dak Prescott, like I said, I can't even fathom giving him $30-plus million. Because the physical skills, he's really like a bigger version of Alex Smith. He doesn't have a great arm. You look at Trubisky, his arm strength is dramatically stronger than Dak. Now, arm strength is not everything. You have to have accuracy. You have to have touch. But when you play in Chicago, which can become freezing cold, and the winds can blow, and you also play Green Bay that's outside, that place is also freezing cold. They're, you know, I think, do they go to Kansas City? Or maybe Kansas City comes to Chicago. You're playing in these hard environments. You need a guy with a big arm, with good arm strength. So I do understand why, in theory, they might like the guy. But he needs to play better. With Khalil Mack, who finally showed some signs of life, they're getting Akeem Hicks back. Allen Robinson, probably one of the more underrated players in the league. Cordarrelle Patterson is just, you know, probably the greatest NFL freak who can't learn literally like two single plays. You know, that's part of his problem. He can't learn plays. But you see him when he gets in the open field, you're like, oh my God, hold on for your ass. Who is this guy? Because he looks like Terrell Owens in the open field. Again, he just can't really learn plays. That's, you know, just give him three or four plays and let him do some stuff. Let him kick return and hand him an end around and call it a day. But, you know, that was the Bears destroyed him. I don't even know what else to say. And I one other thing that Troy brought up, and I'm in total agreement with this, there should be an asterisk. I can't even say that word. But there should be something, like with a guy's stat line at the end of a game. I can't stand, and I've noticed it this year probably more than most. I'm not a huge fantasy guy, so most people listening that play fantasy know this. Garbage time yards, and I get it for fantasy football, but they're a joke. When you're down like three scores in the fourth quarter and you're just dinking and dunking your way to a touchdown, it's just, those should not go on the stat line. You know, it hurts the defensive stats. It makes a quarterback's game look much better than it was. I mean, Dak was mostly terrible tonight. But he, you know, he puffed up his stats a little bit down the stretch. Just, we got to get rid of the garbage time stats. I don't really have a solution for that, but I thought Aikman was on to something. Let's dive into David Tepper and something I noticed yesterday. You know, anytime a new owner takes over, you're probably saying anything, but the difference is when you buy a football team, you are buying something. It's not a normal business, right? This guy, I did some Googling. David Tepper in 2012 made $2.2 billion. You know, like last year, LeBron made $70 million. Tepper in 2012 made $2.2 billion. He was like the number one hedge fund guy. I don't know if you follow the market, but it's had like one of the greatest 10-year runs in the history of America. And this dude crushed it. I mean, crushed it. A lot of people crushed it. This guy was on the highest end. He was the highest earning individual hedge fund manager. I was going to say America, but I'd imagine the world. I mean, there can't be many people making more money than him. So when you take over a football team, the business aspect, selling tickets, marketing, that type stuff you can figure out. But the football stuff is difficult. I noticed, though, something he did that I'm going to give him some credit for. The one thing, just listening to David Tepper talk when he fired Ron Rivera, he feels like a high character guy. And he said that he wanted to start interviewing people. And I at my old radio job, they started trying to replace me while I was still working. And I found out through like a blog. You know, and hell, the same thing happened in the NFL. I don't know if that's ever happened to you in whatever job you work. It's a shitty feeling. Even when you have jobs where you know like it's not going well, like Ron Rivera knew that he was in trouble, it's still a weird feeling. David Tepper fired him because he's like, I'm not going to contact other agents or contact other coaches while I have this super high character guy under contract. So I'm firing him because I'm going to start reaching out to people. I give you credit for doing it that way. And Ron Rivera, 2 days later, addressed the team and gave a press conference. That's not normal. That's just, you know, I can tell a lot. Now, I follow, like, press conferences and stuff for a living. But, like, I'll use the example with the Golden State Warriors. If you play for the Golden State Warriors, whether you're Steph, Clay, whoever, you talk. It's mandated. Like, they're just a high-level organization. After losses, the big boys talk. After wins, the big boys talk. At practice, the big boys talk. It was an eye-opening experience for Kevin Durant. Like, Kevin, this is not Oklahoma City. We speak to the media here. Why? Because television pays our bills. So you speak. And I think Kevin Durant was like, well, at OKC, we could not talk when we didn't want. And that's not how it works here. When they want to talk to you, you talk. And David Tepper came in and operated like a big boy organization, like a high-level operation. He said, you know what, Ron? You've been the coach here for 9 years. If you want to talk to the media, you can talk to the media. That doesn't usually happen. Usually when a guy gets fired midseason on a Monday after a game, you never hear from him again. But Ron Rivera, they handled it with class. They let him speak. And he was, you know, he was a little edgy at his press conference. Now, he was also very classy in it. He didn't feel petty or anything, but he had a little chip on his shoulder. And I think he wanted to make sure that everyone realized, like, he did a pretty good job. And he also said something that really stuck out to me. When he first got hired in 2011, he's like, you know, we went to the grocery store, me and my wife, or maybe just like a local store, and we wanted to buy some, like, sweatshirts for people back. I think they were living in San Diego at the time because he was coaching for the Chargers. And he's like, we walk into the... to whatever store they were in, and we just looked for some shirts to buy, and we couldn't find any. And we didn't see anyone wearing anything. You know why? Because in 2011, obviously they had the number one pick, and that was the year they took Cam. They sucked. They were terrible. And they had been losing pretty consistently there for a while. And since he got there, he's like, you know, I went to the grocery store the other day, and I see Panther shirts everywhere. It really is amazing in the football business, in a business that prints cash. But as I often talk about on this podcast, the Raiders and the Browns and, you know, have been shitty forever, and it doesn't matter. They still get enormous amounts of money from the NFL. But when you win, just because the power of the sport, it is so profitable. It really is. And I'm feeling it right now around here with the Niners being good again. You see jerseys, hats, t-shirts everywhere. Winning. If I was an owner, I would do, and I think some owners claim they do, but do they really do everything possible to win? I mean, truly. Like, Jerry Jones is a good example. He says, I don't get hand cramps writing checks. That's true, Jerry. But your head coach, who's been pretty flawed, you've chosen to stick by him over the last several years. So have you really, like, just building practice facilities and paying for players, like, if your coach is below average, or even average, you're doing yourself a disservice. So David Tepper believes he wants his own guy. He handled it properly. He gave Ron Rivera the respect. He let him address the team, which, again, does not happen everywhere, and let him speak to the media. So I tip my hat to him for doing that. One thing, though, that I have red flagged, he did not fire everybody. He's actually going to keep Marty Herney, his general manager. But he wants to hire an assistant general manager, like baseball style, who's an analytics guy. And it's like, David, I get you've worked for the Steelers, but have you followed the NFL? That's not going to work. So is this assistant GM going to answer to you and not Marty Herney? And who does the coach answer to? Does he answer to Marty Herney? Does he answer to you? Just fire Marty Herney too. I get you might like that guy too, and I get he's picked a couple good players. But if you truly want to start over, just hit the eject button on everybody. And just start over from scratch. So whenever you bring in a new coach or you bring in a new GM, whoever you want to hire first, you can set up a hierarchy. Because right now, just by keeping Marty Herney, unless you're just doing that to kind of keep the peace and you plan on firing him after the season, which is possible. But if you don't, you're screwed up before you even begin with. And you're setting yourself back. Where there's a chance that you're going to hire the wrong guy. Just because as we've seen over the years, whether it's LSU or USC or the Dallas Cowboys, it's hard to hire football coaches. It is hard to hire football coaches. So you might miss. Hell, it's hard to fire GMs. We see it with Gettleman, with Grigson. I mean, there are GMs that miss all the time. They're just swing and a miss. So you want to just give yourself the best chance to succeed. Just start over. Just wipe a clean slate. And my guy Matt Maiocco, who covers the 49ers, I'm sure if you're on Twitter, you probably follow him. He's a great Twitter follow. He said the one advantage is so true that general managers have, the coaches don't, that during the games they tend to sit next to the owner. And they tend to BS with the owner. And they tend to be a little closer than the owner. And talking to a buddy in the league today, he's like, yeah, coaches are just so busy during the season. they don't even have time. Where the GM just talks to the owner a lot. They're much closer. Their relationship's much different with the owner typically. And unlike a lot of coaches, they can just speak normal people talk. They can talk about football on like a remedial level where sometimes it's difficult for coaches. Now, obviously, some coaches like Jason Garrett have really good working relationships with their owner. But if David Tepper, for how as impressed I was with him firing it, Ron Rivera, and handling it the right way, letting him speak, and just operating like a first-class operation, reminded me of the Warriors. Like, this is just high-level shit. It is equally as stupid if you're not going to fire the GM. Just hit the reset button. Okay, let's dive into one more thing. And it got me thinking on my flight home from Hawaii. I downloaded this movie called The Irishman. And I'm sure many of you have seen it by now or heard of it. You know, Joe Pesci, De Niro, Pacino, Scorsese. Netflix gave these guys gave Scorsese like $130 million. The game has changed. As I downloaded it on my iPad to watch on the flight home, it hit me. Movie theaters are dead. They are no more. Now, I know they still exist, and even The Irishman hit a couple of them, right, for like 2 weeks. I even went to see a movie for the first time in like 3 years this summer, the one with Pitt and Leo, what's it called, something in L.A., about the murders. But movie theaters are dead. They're never coming back. The game has changed. Hulu, Amazon Prime, obviously Netflix has so much money. The consumer now wants it on their iPad, wants it on their television. The game's changed. Like, newspapers are still alive. They died a long time ago. And it got me thinking when Ron Rivera was fired, are the day and age of the CEO head coaches dead? Will a quote-unquote CEO head coach ever get hired again? Now, Ron Rivera will probably get a job because he's already kind of established. But will any guy ever get a job again without being like, I'm hiring you to be my defensive or offensive coordinator? And especially an offensive coordinator? I don't really think so. Now, if like John Harbaugh was fired, he'd get a job, Mike Tomlin. But those guys were given the opportunity. Now, Rivera was a defensive coordinator, but he became a quote-unquote CEO head coach pretty quickly. When you look around the league, the best head coaches are mainly calling plays, and a lot of them are on offense. But even defensively, I mean, Pete Carroll has a huge hand in the defense. Mike Zimmer calls defense. Obviously, Andy, Sean Payton, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Matt Nagy, Doug Peterson. Like, all the top guys are calling plays. Belichick's an outlier. I don't even count him. But like, the day and age of the quote-unquote CEO types, I don't think we're ever coming back. Because the one thing David Tepper mentioned, like, yeah, the way the league's trending, just with the way the officiating works, you're going to lean offense. And when you think about your investment as a team, the most money you're going to spend on an individual player is going to be on the quarterback. Just look at Dak Prescott. He's going to get a just stupid amount of money that's going to make me want to throw up. Jared Goff got $40 million too much. Carson Wentz, who I love, and I'm not giving up on yet, got a lot of money too, without really proving much. Mahomes, who's proved a lot, is going to get an astronomical amount. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, now those guys deserve it. Cam Newton, all these guys get a lot of money. So you're going to lean kind of offense, and then you're going to want a guy that can coach the quarterback, because that's where you're investing all your resources, right? Because at the end of the day, I need a defensive scheme guy, but like, you just kind of roll through defensive coordinators. Like, there are only a couple Vic Fangio types out there. I think the CEO type guy is not going to happen much anymore, because I think these owners are going to be paying these coaches so much money. It's easy to pay Andy Reid and Sean Payton and Kyle Shanahan a lot of money. I know exactly what they're doing. Like, I'm paying Ron Rivera. And again, I think Ron Rivera is going to get a good job, and I think he's solid. I think he'd be an immediate upgrade over Freddie Kitchens, who has no clue what he's doing, over Pat Shurmur, who's one of the worst head coaches in recent memory. He could do either one of those. Hell, he can just get Dallas to the playoffs next year. He's fine. But I think a lot of guys like him aren't going to get that opportunity. One, defensive coaches aren't really going to get hired. And people keep asking me, like, who are the coaches this offseason? Like Robert Saleh, who's had a fantastic year for the 49ers, and their defense has been unreal. is he really going to get an opportunity? Now, he's going to get some interviews, but is someone going to hire? He's had one good season as defensive coordinator. Someone's going to hire him to be their head coach? Like, what the hell does he know about a quarterback? I would never. At least Ron Rivera, who's a defensive guy, knows how to act and operate around a star quarterback. Hell, he's had a lot of success with Cam Newton, who's not the easiest guy to coach. But I just think that those guys, and they're mainly defensive guys, are kind of a thing of the past. And they're really just, they're going to be a dying breed. Because the majority of this league, you're either going to be, if I'm going to hire a defensive coach, he's going to call my defense. He ain't going to be a CEO head coach. And those guys are going to be very few and far between. Because most of the guys, right, wrong, or however you agree with it, you know McVay, you know Kyle Shanahan, it's going to be offensive coaches. That's just a reality and a trend. And it's not just it's not even trendy. It's just where the money is, where the resources are going, and how the game is officiating. So these last kind of dying breed of CEO coaches, enjoy them while they're here because they won't be here that much longer. Kind of like the movie theaters. Irishman, highly recommend, might be strong, but I've seen a lot of negative reaction. I personally liked it. CGI a little much. No spoiler alerts. I'd recommend watching. One thing that's kind of a pet peeve of mine is people that hold on to the past. People that love bragging about things that they did, like, you know, 30 years ago or 20 years ago. Or like, I used to date this bombshell in 1987. It's like, bro, it's 2019. It's about to be 2020. Now, if you're like Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods or Warren Buffett, and I mean, certain people can brag about certain things. And obviously with children, your memories, we're all at Thanksgiving talking about the good times. I'm talking about professionally. When you haven't done anything in a long time. And I see it in my own backyard with the San Francisco Giants. They love talking about the World Series they won, you know, and I'm a Giants fan. But 2010 is now 10 years ago. 2012 is 8, and obviously 14 is now 6. The Giants should carry themselves like the Yankees. It's about today. It's about winning now. You think Belichick or Saban, like, are talking about their rings in 2001 or 2003? Hell no. They are consumed with kicking ass right now. Joe Lacob, I see it. He's consumed with these guys coming back trying to win a chip next year. I like people that are consumed with the now, trying to do whatever they can to win now, not holding on to things in the past. And it's just something that always bothers me about people that are like, man, if I could just go back to college. It's like, bro, you're 42. Your life really sucks that bad? Sucks for you. You know, and obviously we've all done things that are really fun we like to go back with. I'm not trying to be like morbid here, but you know, your life should get better and you should always be aspiring to do better things. That's the way the world works, right? And I think USC is at this spot where they're like holding on to their past. Like they had these good times, like the Leinart, Reggie Bush days. Like Leinart's got a kid now that's 12. Leinart's like 35 years old. That's 2005, 2004, 2003. That's a long time ago. I had Carson on. He's now been retired in the NFL. He had a 15-year career for a while. Like, you guys need to get with the present. When I look around all the top programs, and USC has no excuse to not be an elite program, but they're still talking about Pete Carroll. It'd be like Alabama doesn't talk about Bear Bryant all the time. They got Nick freaking Saban. Ohio State's not holding on about the days of Woody Hayes. They went out and got Jim Tressel, then Urban Meyer. Now they got Ryan Day. You know, they just do whatever it takes to win now. Clay Helton seems like a nice guy. Bald brother. I'm rooting for all bald guys. He's not good enough to be at USC. Now, I understand. I read a story today that they went after Bob Stoops. He actually makes a lot of sense. Because Urban Meyer, who is a better coach than Bob Stoops. Urban's, I'd say, beside Nick Saban, is the best coach probably of my lifetime in college. And you could argue you just put him and Nick Saban in a vacuum. Of all the coaches I've watched, maybe Gus and Urban have the best chance to beat Nick. Like, Urban's elite. But he's got baggage. You know, he's got, you say what you want. I'm not saying he killed the guys, but Aaron Hernandez was on his watch. Dude killed people at Florida. They were running like a drug operation at Florida. Just cheating scandals left and right. He left that thing a disaster. At Ohio State, let's call it what it is. They, you know, I'm pretty sure they told Urban, you got to go, man. It's time for you to go. Now, I know he works at Fox and he's lovey-dovey now, but he's got some blemishes on his resume, despite being a lead head coach. And I personally would have no issue hiring a guy with baggage when he's as good as Urban. But clearly, USC had some issues with it. They have, if you Google USC, they've had scandals. They got a lot of shit going on. They're just trying to get a clean resume. And that's why Bob Stoops, who you heard my buddy, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, the head of recruiting at Oklahoma, who's now for Lincoln Riley, Drew Hill, who also got that job by Bob Stoops, has told me multiple times, like, Bob Stoops used to get in front of the staff and say, if I catch any one of you guys cheating, that ain't going to fly here. And he told every one of his staff members, if we catch anyone, he told the Big 12, if anyone cheats in this conference, I'm turning your ass in. There's a reason he hated Art Briles. Art Briles was a cheater. Bob Stoops is a high character guy in college. He's like the Ron Rivera equivalent, except he's won a natty. And that's I got them going after him. I actually think Bob Stoops would have been really good. Bob Stoops is a badass, and he'd win there, and he'd win the right way, where Urban would do it sketchy, and he'd probably win even bigger. But you have to have a plan of like three or four guys. You can't roll back to Clay Helton again. USC is too good of a program. And what are they going to keep playing? Like the Matt Leinart highlights all season when they're 7-5 or 8-4? That can't be acceptable. And there's also bigger picture things here with the Pac-12, the network's not making enough money. They don't have a huge cash to buy all these people out. USC, they got too many chefs in the kitchen. Too many people are complaining, want power with the coach. I know if you follow Petro Papadakis, who's a big radio personality who also played at USC, he's been saying it forever. They got all these boosters and alumni and trustees that all like their, you know, hand in the cookie jar. And Clay Helton is a type of guy you can push around, where the Urban Meyers, the Bob Stoops, the guys like that. Like, Nick Saban is told what to do by nobody. Dabo Sweeney tells everyone on campus what to do. Urban Meyer was untouchable until that domestic violence thing happened, and it was even out of his control. But once you get as big as those guys, even like Lincoln Riley, it's been a short period of time, and he's younger, so it's a little different personality, but like, he's in complete control, you know? And USC needs to figure out how to get a guy like that. Chris Peterson, now Chris Peterson retired. He wouldn't come to LA. They already turned him down. He turned them down, however it went down. But USC's got to find themselves a big-time coach. They just do. Because when recruiting is in like the 70s, and Oregon, who actually is recruiting like USC should be recruiting, and is like the top 10, top 15, landing blue-chip guys left and right, I saw on Twitter tonight during the Thursday night game, Herm Edwards, that's some four-star guy, some linebacker who's going to go to Arizona State next year, who like Alabama and Auburn are offering. Like, what's USC doing? USC is basically just a little bit better version of the joke that is UCLA football. They just happen to have a winning record. But 8-4 at USC might as well be 2-10. It's 8-4 is like, can you imagine saying, hey, Nick Saban, you just went 8-4. He'd jump off a bridge. Can you imagine telling Lincoln Riley or Dabo Sweeney, what do you think about 8-4? They'd puke in their mouth. That should not be acceptable. And what the reality is at USC is mediocrity and average is now acceptable. And it's sad. And I get that times have changed and it's not 2005 anymore. But they still have unlimited resources. They have an unlimited recruiting bank. And it's kind of getting away from them, because now the top players in California are going to Oregon. Hell, they're going to Oklahoma. They're going to Alabama. I had a guy, Najee Harris, I'm sure you saw last week against Auburn, who's enormous, who is just an absolute beast. He's from Antioch. He's literally grew up 15 minutes away from where I'm sitting. How does U.S. back in the Pete Carroll heyday, you think that guy got out of California? You think of Jeff Tedford in the Cal's heyday, that guy would have got out? Like, what is going on here? And maybe it's television, maybe it's the way all these Auburn and Alabama and Clemson, Ohio State, now they're so national. Like, it became national with Pete Carroll in the early 2000s, but it's never been more national. The world's flat, obviously the country's flat in terms of football players, and USC is just a dumpster fire. Okay, let's dive into the games this weekend, and I guess if you're listening to this on Friday, I like Utah, I'm rooting for Utah. Don't feel great. You know, I think Utah, you know, the game's at Levi Stadium, always kind of weird. It might rain. I hope Utah wins. I think Ohio State will be Wisconsin. Bad matchup for Wisconsin. It's way too many athletes. Virginia, I watched that game in Hawaii, Virginia Tech. They're not terrible. I've always liked Bronco Mendenhall, but Clemson's going to be too much. And then LSU, Georgia. I didn't know this, but I was driving the other day, and maybe Feinbaum was on a channel kind of breaking down. I guess Georgia's got a lot of injuries. I mean, LSU just kind of feels like a team of destiny. LSU, Ohio State, sign me up for that national championship. Even though I wouldn't sleep on Clemson, and Utah's better than a lot of people think. Though, if Utah wins and wins close and Oklahoma blows them out, it wouldn't be crazy if Oklahoma gets in. But either way, I think we're going to get a really good Final Four. We can't lose. Ohio State, Clemson, LSU, Utah, or Oklahoma. I personally wouldn't mind Utah. Just give me something fresh. I can dig that. Let's get into the NFL games. This has got to be one of the better games of the day. Ravens at the Bills. Lamar Jackson is Barry Sanders with a good arm. He's incredible. But this Bills team is hot right now. They're 9-3. They're nipping at the Patriots' heels. Their defense is fantastic. Sean McDermott's, you know, a candidate for the coach of the year. Their defense is fast. And the Niners' defense is really fast, but with that rain, it neutralized them a little bit. And they have this weird scheme where the defensive end took the running back and no one took Lamar Jackson. I would imagine Sean McDermott tweaks what the Niners did and attacks this Lamar Jackson running game a little differently. I don't know if the Bills win outright, but I definitely like them plus the 6.5. This is just a great game. I hope I get it here in the Bay Area in the morning. I actually probably won't because I get the Niner game. Redskins at Green Bay. I mean, the Redskins are a joke. The Green Bay Packers were kind of lucky that after that Niners game, they got the Giants and then the Redskins. 12.5 line. I saw Rodgers was saying, telling all the Packer fans to drink up before the game. I don't think, Aaron, it doesn't really matter. You guys are going to kill these guys. I like the Packers big in this game. And they're kind of in the driver's seat headed into that game at Minnesota that, you know, depending on what happens in this Niners game and with New Orleans, like they're still, and Seattle, like the Packers still control their own destiny for a one seed. Maybe not control their own destiny for a one seed, but definitely control their own destiny for potentially a one or two seed. And they're in the mix, though I don't think they're quite as good. But I was talking to a buddy in the league that was watching Rodgers and was like, God, he's still so good. I mean, when you look at their offense, like their O-line's just okay. Devontae's good, but he's been banged up all season. Running backs are solid, but Jimmy Graham's kind of a wuss. They don't really have any other wide receivers, and they're still going to end up 12-4. It's really remarkable. That's when we talk about paying quarterbacks, though, I pay $100 million to Rodgers. Broncos at the Houston Texans. Listen, I thought the Houston Texans were going to lose to the Patriots, and Deshaun Watson lit up that secondary like a Christmas tree. Denver is easily the best 4-8 team of all time. Their point differential is like minus 30. I mean, they have a point differential like a, you know, much more like a 6-6 team than a 4-8 team. They're feisty. I would take the Broncos plus 6.5 in this game. But I think the Texans, Watson's playing well. Hopkins is my favorite player in the league. And when Will Fuller plays well, they're just tough to beat. Drew Lock's going to go on the road and win a game against a playoff team. Hard to see. Game of the day, 49ers at the Saints. You know, the 49ers have, they're 10-2, and their two losses are walk-off field goals. They're clearly really good. They have two things that do well, that travel well, defense and a run game. They're going to need that against the Saints. I actually think their defensive line matches up better against pocket quarterbacks, Rodgers, Breeze, than it does like Kyler, Russell, and Lamar. So Dee Ford's coming back with Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner. They should be able to get after Drew Brees' ass. Now, you know, Latavius Murray, Alvin Kamara, you got Jared Cook, you got Michael Thomas. This team is good, and the defense is really good. The Saints are awesome. If the 49ers go in there and win this game, I'll be a little shocked. I know it's a 2.5-point line, and I think the Niners are really good. I think the Niners can win the Super Bowl. But going on the road to win in New Orleans, they've been away all week because played in Baltimore, then they flew to Florida, then they're flying to New Orleans. It's just, it's not ideal. You know, this is set up for the Saints to win, but this is, you know, the Saints getting extra rest because they played last Thanksgiving, so they're getting a 10-day rest. I don't know, man. I just, it's going to be tough. I would take the Saints. And this is, the Saints win this game. They're 11-2 with wins over Seattle and San Francisco. They are a lock one or two seed, and I think they're in the driver's seat for that one seed. And, who, you know, I know the Rams went in there last year and beat them, but they're going to lose 2 years in a row at home in the playoffs when they're the number one overall seed. Hard to see. Bengals at the Browns. no thoughts on the Bengals. Absolutely none. Odell Beckham said some comments like, I don't even know where I'll be next year. You can say he doesn't want to be in Cleveland. He's a superstar wasting away in Cleveland. This is, he wants out. You can tell. It's obvious. I wouldn't be shocked. You want to hear my way too early offseason random prediction? He demands a trade. And you know what? I wouldn't blame him. So I think the Browns win. Carolina at Atlanta. I actually kind of like the Panthers. Clearly the things all the players were saying about Ron Rivera, I think they're going to take some pride this week. Atlanta, after those two games, after they came out of the bye and won, get out of here, Atlanta. Dan Quinn, Packers shit. Just a terrible season for the Falcons. I like Carolina to come out swinging. I had a guy in the league tell me, and this has been one of my favorite players in the NFL now for the last like 6-7 years, that he's like, you know, watching this guy, he doesn't quite look the same, and that's Luke Kuechly, who just, you know, looks a little longer in the tooth. He's had a bunch of injuries, a little stiffer, still a good player, but his days as an elite player are probably over. Now, Ray Lewis, you know, the second half of his career was no longer an elite athlete. He was a little stiffer, and he still was really good. So you can get by with instincts and smarts and toughness, but the day and the age of Kuechly just being, you know, the top dog and middle linebacker are probably over. Detroit at Minnesota. Detroit's just in shambles. They're a joke. They really are a joke franchise. They tried to run themselves like New England, buy low, sell high, buy low, all that BS. And they're trading away good young ascending players to good teams like the Seattle Seahawks. And Matt Stafford's been banged up. I'm sure everyone in that building could get fired, and they would deserve it. It's a dumpster fire. You know, Minnesota was really playing pretty well in that Monday night game up until Dalvin Cook fumbled, and it kind of derailed. Now, I haven't seen the latest on Thielen. I would hold him out for this game because you need him healthy for that Packer game. So I like Minnesota. Now, the 12.5 points, I'd probably take Detroit plus 12.5, but Minnesota's going to win this game. Miami at the Jets. I couldn't even pretend to have a thought on this game. Beside the Dolphins, play really hard. I like watching Sam Darnold play a little bit, but God, that sucks. Like, are people really watching this game? Seriously. Like, if I worked in the NFL and was like a general manager or a scout, I had to go to this game as like an advanced scout, that would suck. And I guess the game's not in Miami, it's in New York. Ugh, awful. Indy at Tampa. Indy's falling apart a little bit. Ever since Jacoby got hurt, he's kind of been a shell of himself. He can't really move. He's not a great athlete to begin with. And I'm saying it from the beginning. I have a lot of respect for Ballard, but he drafts and he builds his team with a lot of overachievers. They don't really out-talent guys. Like, you're going against Tampa, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate. You say what you want about Jameis. Jameis can make some big plays. Like, they got some dudes. And their offense has really been humming. Games in Tampa, they're 5-7. It wouldn't totally shock me if when all the dust settles, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 8-8. Because they can really score. I don't see how Indy scores with them. I like Tampa, and basically Indy, if Indy loses this game, bye-bye playoffs. You're not going to the playoffs. It's basically the playoffs. If the Titans beat the Raiders, that would probably end it. And let's talk about that game. The Raiders are probably the worst 6-6 team in NFL history. Their point differential is minus 87. For example, the Chicago Bears were 6-6 coming into today's game, or tonight's game, and their point differential was plus 6 or plus 4. Like, minus 87, that's like a 3-win team. It's like the Detroit Lions. That's awful. You stink. I think the Titans come in and Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, and they destroy the Raiders. The Raiders' defense is awful. Josh Jacobs, who's banged up, is the Raiders' best player. If he can't just dominate, they have no shot. I mean, none. That's why their point differential is so terrible. Still with 6 wins, because they get blown out all the time. So I like Tennessee big, and I think Tennessee and Houston are both headed for the playoffs. We got 2 games, you know, with 3 weeks remaining with those two teams playing for the AFC South. Chargers at the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm interested to watch Gardner Minshew. You know, he's Foles, 50 million guy, benched. Chargers 4-8. Anthony Lynn surely going to get fired. Easy to fire a guy when you're paying him, you know, minimum wage version of coaching salaries. But that's Dean Spanos for you. He's a minimum wage coaching salary guy. He's the only guy in the NFL that can own a team with so much talent and still suck. And that's why he always pays, you know, coaches not a lot of money. And then he complains. He's a lifetime complainer, cheap, and just kind of a historic loser. Chiefs at New England. this game's pretty good. You know, this game is really pretty good. The Chiefs are kind of heating up. I think they're figuring it a little bit out on defense. And the good thing is, their defense is still not that good, but the Patriots' offense is horrendous. It is not good. They have no tight end. Their running game is very hit or miss. They're depending on Julian Edelman, who's been banged up all season long. Jacoby Myers is hitting the rookie wall. He's an undrafted free agent. N'Keal Harry, who I love, is coming back off injury reserve. You can tell Tom Brady's getting frustrated with them. Their offense just stinks. And the Chiefs' offense is kind of hitting their stride. Mahomes getting his swag back. Tyreek Hill looks awesome. Kelsey looks awesome. They just make plays with all their wide receivers. It's hard to bet against New England at home, but I kind of like the Chiefs in this game. Definitely plus the three, and I think they definitely have a chance to beat them. This game's going to be good. If New England loses, and especially if they don't score any points against this Chiefs defense, I think it's time to really sound the alarm. And when I say sound the alarm, like, this team's not going to win the Super Bowl. And I don't, like, for the last 7 years, New England's going to win the Super Bowl. New England's going to win the Super Bowl. Even on years when they didn't, I felt confident they were going to do that. The last game against the Houston Texans was the first time I thought, like, this team is not going to win the Super Bowl. And if they lose this game at home to the Chiefs, well, it's kind of not a must-win situation, but kind of. They got the Bills coming up in a couple weeks. You know, if the Bills beat the Ravens, they'd be tied, even though New England would have the tiebreaker because they beat them in Buffalo. Start getting a little interesting. Pittsburgh at Arizona. I don't know how Pittsburgh's doing it. Mason Rudolph stinks. He's now benched. Duck Hodges somehow beat Baker Mayfield. Their defense has been excellent. Juju was out last week. But they just find ways to win. I'd be hard-pressed to see the Steelers going into Arizona and losing a game. The Arizona Cardinals laid one of the biggest eggs of the year last week. I mean, they got boat raced by a team that had been playing so terribly. They made Jared Goff look like John Elway. And anytime you make Jared Goff look like John Elway, I got a massive red flag on your franchise, and I like the Steelers. Then the night game is the Seattle Seahawks at the LA Rams. Listen, I say over and over, I think Seattle's one of the worst rosters that's ever been 10-2. I think that speaks to the greatness of Russell Wilson. I think it speaks to the greatness of Pete Carroll. I think it speaks to the character of toughness that they have on their roster, because the talent isn't really there. But I find it hard to bet against Seattle. Now, that being said, night game, L.A., not that that means that much. I mean, oh, the Coliseum, who even cares? It actually might be a decent USC crowd just there to support Pete Carroll. I hope L.A. wins because I want to see the Niners get some home playoff games, but I don't feel good about it. You know, I feel like Seattle and the Ravens right now just have kind of the football gods on their side and just feel destined. Now, the Ravens are a little more talented. Like, I don't know how Seattle's doing it. I mean, they're like handing the ball to Rashad Penny. I got Russell Wilson running around for his life. I got no-namers on defense making plays. It's really remarkable. They win this game, and the Niners lose. I mean, the Niners can just start getting ready for the Dallas Cowboys or the Philadelphia Eagles. Gross. Okay, let's go Middlecoff mailbag, at John Middlecoff. Bang out some of these questions. Instagram, slide right in those DMs. Current graduate student at UMaine, and your show is solid, my guy. Appreciate it. I was curious to hear your thoughts on how we are living in a reality where both Patriots and Alabama look highly vulnerable. That's a good question. I think New England is just in a unique spot where, you know, they had Gronk retired. They're just have an all-time great retired. You're just kind of screwed. They drafted a first-round wide receiver. He got hurt in training camp, so they didn't have him all season. They attempted to do a Hail Mary with Antonio Brown. That blew up in their face. And they're still 10-2, you know. I think Alabama, their defense was young, and as a guy in the league told me earlier this year, they really the last couple years started to suffer from 5, 6, 7 years ago, if a guy was going to be a third or fourth round pick at Alabama, he just returned, and then next year he'd be a first or second. Now those guys are leaving. So you can't keep, you know, you're going to have years if Georgia or LSU is just good where you're going to lose some of those games. And I also think, you know, if Tua doesn't get hurt, do they lose that game at Auburn? I mean, I was playing golf during it. I was following it on my phone. Didn't the quarterback? I mean, quarterback threw a pick six, and he threw a couple picks. So, you know, if Tua's there, they probably win, and they're probably in the playoff. You know, as crazy as that sounds. I think, you know, football at the highest level is no different than business at the highest level. The margins are just so slim when you're talking about the best of the best. And it's just... I think you're seeing it with those two teams. Now, they're still really well coached. They still got excellent players. Would you ever count them out in a big game? Like, even that Auburn game, that clearly wasn't Alabama's A game, and it took missed field goals for them to lose. Hey, man, listen to both your pods religiously. Just curious of your career path. I know you've been asked a million times, but I had to ask. I was a two-way All-State player in high school in Texas, but knuckleheaded my way out of college football at D2 level. Obviously, I need to work on my degree, but what else can I do to get my foot in the door to become maybe a scout or quality control? I would just start working in college football. You know, that's always the easiest way. It's what I did at Cal Poly, then at Fresno State. So wherever you live, get involved with the program. Whether you live in a D2 school, a D1AA school, and just start working. Because the way the coaching profession works, it's got to be the most nomadic profession in all of America. Guys bounce around everywhere. I was just talking, DMing with a coach tonight who interviewed for a job today, and he's hoping to interview with another job later next week. And he actually just got fired from a job. So just the profession is nuts, especially in college football. The turnover's crazy. Because in the NFL, when you become a coordinator somewhere, if you don't get a head job, you just stay a coordinator there. In college, like, guys move coordinator jobs. The movement is just insane. So I would get involved in college football. It was actually, looking back, I had as much fun at Fresno State as I did it in the NFL. And I had a good time in the NFL. It was obviously more intense, but my time at Fresno State was awesome. I love the guys I worked with. It was sweet. In my opinion, the NFC as a whole is totally better than the AFC due to more teams fight to get a playoff spot. With that being said, who is a favorite you think out of the NFC will win the Super Bowl? Well, I think the key to the NFC, probably unlike the AFC, which probably anyone can win the AFC this year that gets in, even Tennessee. Like, Tennessee beat Kansas City this year. Why couldn't Tennessee beat the Patriots? You know, why couldn't the Chiefs beat Lamar Jackson? I mean, they did, you know, so it's just, I think the AFC is wide open. I think the NFC, if you tell me that New Orleans or Seattle get the number one seed, it's going to be hard to beat those teams at home. It really is. Now, if you told me the Niners get home field, I do think Seattle, New Orleans, Minnesota, Green Bay could come in and beat them, but I also think they would be, if the Niners were to get home field, that would mean they beat New Orleans this weekend and beat Seattle. So I think whoever has the one or two seed and hosts the NFC Championship game is going to be in the driver's seat to go to the Super Bowl. But beside the Cowboys or maybe the Eagles, I really do think all five teams could win it. You know, I know the Niners blew out the Packers, but I think the Packers, they still got Aaron Rodgers. Even Minnesota, they were right there with Seattle. The Saints are really good. The NFC is going to be a bloodbath. Broncos fan, what will Drew Lock need to show the Broncos not to draft a quarterback early in the first round? I'll be honest, I didn't watch one snap of that Charger game. At least from what I've read, it didn't look that terrible. You just need to show some growth. To me, you just need to show the traits. You can make the throws, maybe you can lead some touchdown drives, wouldn't mind seeing like a late game winning drive. You know, I think you kind of know it when you see it. If the guy's just completely over his head and sucks for the next 4 weeks, you might have to reevaluate. But you could argue you just drafted him the second round. He's getting next year no matter what. You know, he's going to get to start next year, which I would imagine is the case. Do you think the reason Josh Jacobs wasn't featured or mentioned in Hard Knocks was because Gruden knew he had something special and didn't want to give the league a heads up? Kid already broke 1,000 yards rushing, which is a rookie record. No, I think Josh Jacobs just didn't want to talk. I think that's it. I mean, he was drafted in the first round. You know, he's his team's starting running back. So it's not like, we're bringing this guy out of the bullpen. No one's seen. No, I mean, everyone knew. Like, Josh Jacobs, he played at fucking Alabama. So I know what you're saying. But I don't think it had Gruden. I mean, Gruden was in front of the camera the whole time. I think it was just Jacobs wanted no part of the camera. I think he's just a low-key guy. You know, I think he comes from Alabama. He's wired like Saban. Just no bullshit. Just wants to kick ass and take names. And he's a badass. Jim Harbaugh has a winning record against Penn State and Michigan State and tied with Wisconsin. I'll take your lumps for Ohio State. Yeah, but my point is, those teams beat his ass this year. So yeah, he's beat those teams in the past. Well, James Franklin's now been there for years and built that team up. Paul Chris and Jim Leonard have now built Wisconsin up. And they're kicking his ass. I'm living in the present. I'm not living 3-4 years ago. I'm talking now. I watched those games this year. Harbaugh's fifth year in the program. Every player in that program is his. He rubber stamped every single player they scholarship. And he got his ass kicked by Wisconsin. And Penn State, they made a little bit of a comeback, but he got his ass kicked in the first half. Like, that happened. I know what you're saying. I'm a Harbaugh guy. But this year was not his crowning achievement against those three teams. Should the Browns consider going after Ron Rivera? Seemed like he could bring some stability to the team and get the defense firing up to its full potential. Also seems like someone who has that could handle all the personalities. Obviously, Freddie can't be the long-term answer. Yeah, I don't know how Freddie... I haven't talked to one person in the NFL that thought Freddie wearing that shirt and then losing to Duck Hodges did not cost him his job. Like, it's over. Now, I'm not... John Dorsey, one of the most overhyped GMs going. So I just, is Jimmy Haslam going to fire everybody? Is it all Freddie Kitchens' fault? Like, John Dorsey traded his best offensive line for Odell Beckham, and Baker Mayfield can't get Odell Beckham the ball. So you wonder why Odell Beckham more likely is going to ask for a trade out. He can't get him the football. Their best wide receiver, Jarvis Landry. Their best offensive weapons are running backs. Yeah, but I think Ron Rivera would be such a massive upgrade there, it's not even funny. Ron Rivera is a legitimate NFL head coach. Freddie Kitchens is not even a coordinator. Question. It seems like Trubisky is receiving a lot of heat from the national media, taking most of the blame for the Bears' poor season. But why isn't Nagy receiving more criticism? I get Trubisky is awful, but there's time to watch the Bears, and defense looks like it's given up, and Nagy is defeated. Just curious about your thoughts on Nagy now moving forward. Well, you know, I think, did Troy Aikman say they've won 5 of 7 games? This question was before tonight's game. You know, if they go 8-8 or 9-7, I think they hold their head high and think they had a pretty good season. With Ron Rivera being fired today, how do you think he would fare as the Cowboys head coach? I think it's a match made in heaven. I actually think that's a really good fit. I know Jane Slater, who also does the His and Hers podcast for the Cowboys for Colin, was tweeting out that they've talked to Urban Meyer, that they're going to go after Lincoln Riley, that the offensive coordinator at Clemson is going to be a guy. So one thing's pretty consistent there. They probably want an offensive coach. I mean, they have Dak Prescott. They have this offense. I think Jason's in, obviously, I mean, Jason's not in major trouble. It's over. Like, it's over for Jason Garrett. Also, who do you think would be a good replacement for Ron Rivera? My sleeper would be Dabo Swinney. You know, it just, he's from, he lives in that area, coaches at Clemson. I think that would be a big splashy hire. I don't know if it'd work, but he would know all the talent coming out. I would take a swing there. He clearly is a big, like, he's kind of like Pete Carroll of the South. Now, his one negative would be I don't think he's ever coached in the NFL. But I don't see why he wouldn't have success. I mean, he's kicked ass at Clemson. I mean, kicked ass. He's turned them into Alabama of the ACC. Now, the ACC is worse than the SEC. But let's not, I mean, Alabama didn't play anyone this year except Auburn and LSU. So I would go, I think Dabo Swinney would be my sleeper. If I was David Tepper, I would 1,000,000% get a sleeper interview or sleeper sit down with Dabo Swinney. What would you say about Kyle bringing in Rivera as an offensive assistant? Kyle's pretty much has the entire offense, but I do think he would help add a guy who has been the helm of McCaffrey getting 1,000. Yeah, but Rivera's a defensive coach, so he's not bringing him as an offensive assistant. I think the reason that McCaffrey did so well, one, is McCaffrey was the 8th pick in the draft. I mean, he's a superstar, and North Turner was the offensive coordinator. Rivera's a defensive guy. Rivera's a leader. That's kind of what he is. Kyle's not bringing him in. I was wondering what you think of the Giants situation. Do you see potential in Daniel Jones? How's the future looking there? I'm not a big Daniel Jones guy. Game against Tampa, his first start was really impressive. Since then, he has 7 million fumbles, and they get their ass kicked every week. I think Daniel Jones was one of the biggest reaches in draft history. That's just a bad pick. There's no way around it. I've always been a Niner lifer and have followed sentiment surrounded Jed York fairly closely over the last few years. It seems like Jed has taken a much more hands-off approach since hiring Shanahan and Lynch, and the climate around the franchise seems to be much healthier. What has he done to improve the situation there? I mean, I think it's no different than Harbaugh. I think he just hired the right guy and he just stays away. The one thing about Jed, he's actually a good owner as long as you're doing well. He just stays out of it. He does not give a shit. He doesn't tell you who to draft. He doesn't tell you what to do. He doesn't tell you who to hire. He's actually a pretty good boss. He pays a lot of money, you know. Now, it's just when they start losing and he kind of injects some of his own opinions, which he has not done. I give him credit. I think my boss for The Athletic, Tim Kawakami, wrote a long piece. Like, Jets just stayed hands off. He's the opposite of Jerry Jones, as he should be. And he hired Kyle Shanahan. Might be the best hire he's had, I mean, clearly, since Harbaugh. I was curious as to the path in college you took to become a scout and eventually an analyst. I would say I've been doing it my whole life. I mean, I've been watching sports, I mean, religiously. It's the only thing I've ever done and ever knew a lot about. So I just knew I had to work in it. And it just, in college, I started working for the athletic department. I wrote an article for the Mustang Daily. And then I got involved with the football program at Cal Poly. And then I got a job at Fresno State. And I got in the NFL and I learned a lot about football. I mean, I was a huge football fan before that, but then I learned, like, really learned about football and got the opportunity to become friends with a lot of these people in the league. And, you know, I'm pretty opinionated, crazy SOB, so you just kind of combine the two things and it's kind of worked out. You know, there's people like, is there a major? I was an ag business major at Cal Poly. You know, you know what I majored in? Watching sports. That's what I thought about. What have you thought about most of your life? Chicks and sports and food. Those are the three things that I think about a lot. Still to this day, I'm 35 years old, so not much has changed. I would imagine, you know, when I'm 65, probably be the same. You know, you kind of just are who you are. It's a life. You know, this isn't like a passion project. This is what I do. And so you got to just put all my chips in the middle of the table. So if you want to get into it, you kind of got to be all in. Appreciate everyone listening. Enjoy the weekend and enjoy the football. Some college games. Who knows? Maybe we get a crazy upset. Probably not. And enjoy the games on Sunday. I'll talk to you next Monday. Peace.